Support comes from the Copper Whale Inn, located in downtown Anchorage, near business and arts, activities, and events, with breakfast served daily. The Copper Whale Inn. Reservations online at copperwhale.com.
The next installment of the Karen Inn Concert Series is coming up November 20th. Grace Elliott will host Blues by Association, Back Porch Blues and Deep Soul Grooves with some of Juno's best blues musicians, Ryland Bueller, Rob Weber, Brian Nichols, Kyle Harris, Jim White, Nick Wagner, and Eric. These shows have been selling out, so if you want tickets, be sure to get them in advance at KRNN.org or the station. That's Blues by Association, Wednesday, November 20th at the Goldtown Theater at 7 p.m. And welcome to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser. It's Thursday, November 14th. We have a great show lined up for you today. We'll talk about tonight's showcase of the latest absinthe films. We'll talk with Dwayne Corbin in town to conduct the Juno Wind Ensemble's fall concert. Pat Race from Alaska Robotics will be here with details about their Kickstarter campaign to produce political satire online. We'll also discuss Sunday's Remembrance Gathering. And with every Thursday, we'll talk to Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up. All that and more here on Juno Afternoon. And first, let's hear National Native News. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. President Obama and his administration addressed tribal leaders from across the country Wednesday in Washington. Matt Laszlo reports.
Cabinet heads laid out their vision for Indian country in a day-long summit at the Interior Department. And like the president's address, they all report a mix of progress and hard work remaining.
We've created jobs, building new roads and high-speed internet to connect more of your communities to the broader economy. We've made major investments in job training and tribal colleges and universities, but the fact remains Native Americans face poverty rates that are higher by far than the national average. And that's more than a statistic, that's a moral call to action. We've got to do better.
As for tribal leaders, they're largely praising the Obama administration for carrying through on its promise to engage and work with Indian country. Still, problems remain. They say the biggest hurdles facing tribes remain health care, poverty, crime, and land and trust issues. Even so, Jack Potter Jr., vice chairman of the Redding Ranchero tribe in Northern California, says he's optimistic.
Yeah, there's progress being made. It's not in large steps, but little steps, but it's getting there.
Mr. Obama also announced he's planning to make his first trip to Indian country as president next year. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
This week, the Indian Law and Order Commission released a report on public safety. The commission makes recommendations to Congress and the President. KMBA's Jocelyn Estes has more.
Indian Law and Order Commission Chairman Troy Ide says the gap between public safety for Native Americans and others is huge, but parity in funding and shifting law enforcement and court systems from federal agencies to tribes could close it. The commission recommends ways to do both, while also safeguarding civil rights and building accountability and transparency. And, Ide says, it can all happen relatively quickly.
Our national goal with this report was to close this gap between Native America and the rest of the United States within 10 years, to have comparable levels of crime prevention in both places. And we think it can be done. I mean, we're very optimistic about it being done.
The commission's report says the situation of the most vulnerable Native American youth is dire. Too many live in poverty, exposed to high rates of sexual abuse, violence, substance abuse, and suicide, but without access to support services. Ide says problems with crime are worst in Alaska, where he says most Native communities lack regular access to police, courts, and related services. The commission's recommendations call for action by all branches of the federal government and from state and tribal leadership and communities.
That was Jocelyn Estes reporting. Today is World Diabetes Day. As Charles Michael Ray reports, efforts are underway to change high rates of the disease among Native people.
Globally, diabetes is on the rise. Third world countries that take up more westernized diets can see the disease skyrocket. is an issue that tribal nations in the United States have been dealing with for years. Dr. Jeff Henderson is president of the Black Hills Chapter for American Indian Health. He says while tribes may have led the global increase in diabetes, they are now leading some efforts to combat the disease. Henderson points to the results of trials being conducted by the Indian Health Service on 200 tribes across the country. He says the Diabetes Prevention Project shows that culturally tailored lifestyle changes back to traditional diets and exercise can reduce diabetes.
They had very, very strikingly positive results for this trial, which are really exciting. You know, this allows tribes to add their own unique cultural touch.
Henderson says prevention of diabetes by empowering tribal nations to incorporate more traditional lifestyles is much more cost-effective than treating the disease after it takes hold. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
On this day in 1908, Alaska Native leader Dr. Walter Soboloff was born. The Tlingit pastor passed away in 2011 at age 102. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Before we hear from our first guest, I thought we'd like to hear from Garrison Keeler, always a favorite, with today's Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 14th of November, 2013. It was on this day, 1832, the world's first streetcar named the John Mason began operation in New York City, running between Prince Street and 14th Street in Lower Manhattan. Built by John Stevenson, who was 23, and who modeled it on a railway car, but set it lower so the floor was in between the wheels, making it easier to climb aboard. The driver sat up front on an open platform, controlled the horses, had a brake handle to stop the streetcar. The conductor sat in back, collected the money, and rang a bell to signal when to stop, when to go. By 1870, New Yorkers made 100 million trips a year in horse-drawn streetcars, and by 1880 there were at least 150,000 horses in the city, each horse producing about 22 pounds of manure a day, and the city absolutely stank. But the subway came in, and the automobile, and in 1917, horse-drawn streetcars ceased to operate in New York City. It was on this day, 1851, Harper and Brothers published Moby Dick by Herman Melville, about Captain Ahab, obsessed with hunting down the great white sperm whale that took his leg. The book had been published first in Great Britain, and the British publisher accidentally left out the ending of the book, the epilogue, which meant there was no explanation of how the narrator, Ishmael, lived to tell the tale. It seemed like he died in the end with everyone else on the ship. So the reviews from Britain were harsh, at a time when Americans tended to defer to British critical opinion. A lot of American newspaper editors reprinted reviews from Britain. Melville was counting on Moby Dick to bring in enough money to pay off his debts, but the book flopped partly because of those harsh British reviews, and Melville never fully recovered from the disappointment. And it's the birthday of Astrid Lindgren, born near Vimmerby, Sweden, 1907, who wrote about Pippi Longstocking, 9-year-old girl, no parents, lives in a red house at the edge of a Swedish village with her horse and her pet monkey, Mr. Nilsson. She has red pigtails, she wears one black stocking and one brown, and she eats whole chocolate cakes and sleeps with her feet on the pillow, and she's the strongest girl in the world. Here's a poem for today by Lewis Jenkins entitled Mockingbird. I remember when I was a child, I had a pair of canaries in a cage in my bedroom. I had the idea that I would raise and sell canaries. I asked one of my sisters if she remembered them. She remembered that they were parakeets, not canaries. I asked another sister. She said she didn't remember any canaries, but she remembered how mean I was to her. My youngest sister doesn't remember having birds, but thinks that we had a pet rabbit. I don't remember that. My brother thinks we had a pet crow that talked. I don't remember a crow, but I remember we had a minor bird for a while that said, "Hello, sweetie pie," but he belonged to someone else. My mother says that she would never have allowed birds or any other animals in the house. I remember how the female canary ignored the male, but chirped plaintively to a mockingbird that sang outside my window all summer long. A poem by Lewis Jenkins, Mockingbird, from Tin Flag, New and Selected Prose Poems, published by Will-o'-the-Wisp Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app. Available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. It's Thursday, November 14th, and in the studio with me, I have Ken Fix, and actually, Ken is the Director of Programming at the Planetarium. Hi, Ken. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Shona. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, sure. So, the Planetarium, awesome place. I love hanging out there. And what's new? What's going on over there?
All right. Well, we have two shows coming up. One's this next Tuesday, which is a special movie showing of Apollo 18. We actually got permission from the studio to run it, so we're kind of happy about that one. It starts at 6:30 p.m. and it runs about 90 minutes. It's PG rated for some scary images and creepy stuff, and you know, it's a little bit of a scary movie. I was kind of hoping we could run it for Halloween, but you know, permission got delayed until now, and you know, we finally got the okay to run it. So it's on the schedule for 6:30, and it'll be on until about 9 that night.
So Apollo 18, I have to say I'm really bad at movie trivia and anything movie. So can you refresh my memory, please?
Okay, well, this one came out about 2 years ago, and it's kind of in the docudrama style where they've shot stuff that makes it look like it's found footage that was hidden in a NASA vault or something like that. But, you know, we stopped Apollo missions after 17, and, of course, the tagline on the movie is, well, there's a reason why we've never gone back, and that's...
In a
you know,
world
that's
where
this thing
yes.
is, yeah, which is creepy, and, you know, it has a Russian spacecraft that's landed on the moon, and it never left, and, you know, why is that still there, and, oh, my God, what's happening to us? So it's a little bit of a shocker, and it does have some creepy images in it, but that's pretty much it.
So when you all play the movies at the Planetarium, are they projected onto the ceiling, or how does that work?
Yes, they are. We run it through the PowerPoint projector, and I have a chance to use the audio system in the Planetarium, which never gets used otherwise. So in the past 3 summers, I've actually run the retro sci-fi movie schedule. So we've run things like War of the Worlds, and we've run a Fantastic Voyage. We ran Planet of the Apes this last summer, the original one with Charlton Heston. So we've actually been able to use the Planetarium that way in the summertime. And then we return to our educational programs once we get to the fall. Because there's a lot of people that are out of town during the summer. But the summer atmosphere, just like this one with Apollo 18, is going to be really relaxed. People can bring their lawn chairs if they want, blankets, that's fine. You know, there's nothing specific, like it's a little bit more rigid when I'm putting on a, you know, one of the scheduled presentations for the month that I have to have chairs out nice and neat and stuff like that. So when we do the movies, we pop popcorn and, you know, take donations for that, and that goes to fund the things that are going on at the Planetarium. Of course, we'd like to get the big donation, which is about $100,000 for a digital star ball, but I doubt anybody's going to drop that in the bucket on Tuesday night. Welcome to if they want. You know, it is the Christmas season coming up, so anybody that's really feeling charitable out there, you know, we'll take whatever we can get.
Well, I have to ask, digital star ball, please.
The one that projects the stars onto the dome right now is an analog star ball, which means it doesn't use digital projecting technology. It actually has a big, bright arc bulb that's in the middle of it that shines through holes that are on the outside of the ball and creates the, you know, constellations that you see in the night sky. And, of course, we can manipulate that to show the constellations from any point on the hemisphere or in the world, for that matter. And we can also set it for a date and time of the year. So if I wanted to know what it was going to look like at Sydney, Australia on July 21st, I can set it for Sydney, Australia using the latitude and longitude, and I can set it for that time of year, too. So all the stars are going to be exactly the way you would see them in the night sky at that location.
Too cool. I hope somebody drops a $100,000 donation
that's all
in your
right.
bucket.
We take what we can get.
I like it. So what else? You've got the movie on Tuesday night starting at 6:30. What else?
On July 26th, which is the following Tuesday, is the main show that I do every month. And most of my shows have been a mixture of Greek mythology and planetary science. This one's no exception. In fact, it's the King of the Gods. So I get to cover Zeus and the planet Jupiter, which is it's pretty good because, you know, I get to cover a lot of mythology associated with Zeus, his place also in Roman mythology. It's basically they just changed the name from Zeus to Jupiter. But otherwise, it's the same god. The Roman pantheon of gods just adopted what the Greeks had done and just changed the names, except for Apollo. Apollo is still Apollo in Greek and Roman. And
so what is the planetarium presentation like for that Tuesday?
The one that I do is a PowerPoint presentation along with a lecture, so I show slides and probably short video clips, some animations of Jupiter's rotation. I've also got some animations of the four major moons that orbit Jupiter, so I'll be talking about those, the possibility of life on Europa. And there's another probe that we've got on its way out there called Juno, which is going to be exploring. It's not J-U-N-E-A-U, it's J-U-N-O, but it's going to be exploring Jupiter in about another 18 months, so we'll hopefully get a little bit more fascinating data, but I'll talk about that spacecraft a little bit in detail while we run all the images, and you know, once I get to the end of the program, there's usually an update segment that I do about what our space probes are doing now. I get photos from Curiosity on Mars and stuff like that and run those in with the presentation just to let people know that the space program isn't just us hitchhiking rides with the Russians.
Sure. So what time does that start?
It'll be 6:30 as well. That one will run from 6:30 to 7:30, and we'll also feature the stars tonight on the Star Ball, so everybody gets to see what the night sky would look like in Juno on that particular night, whether it's raining outside or not.
Oh, that sounds great. And if people want more information, is there a place they can check out online, or is there a phone number that they can call?
Sure. There's our online website is www.mariedrakeplanetarium.org, O-R-G, and you'll find the schedule of events on there. Also, our events are posted on the Juno Empire website, too, so you can check those out.
Great. And if you're a radio listener and you haven't been to the planetarium, it's just one of those cool little finds in Juno that you go one time and you're like, wow, this is great. I think I have to go back. Yeah,
it's amazing that we have a planetarium here because the next closest ones are in Anchorage or Seattle. And the planetarium here is actually bigger than the one in Anchorage.
Yeah, we're pretty amazing that way. Well, thank you so much, Ken. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Shona.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, November 14th, and I'm Shona Strausser. Next in the studio with me, I have Sarah McNair-Grove, who's the president of the Juno Community Bands, and here to talk about the Juno Wind Ensemble, their upcoming concert. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Yeah. So first of all, could you tell us what the Juno Wind Ensemble is for those folks that don't know?
Okay. The Juno Wind Ensemble is a group of adult musicians who enjoy playing together. And a wind ensemble consists of wind instruments. So we're talking clarinets, flutes, oboes, bassoons, tubas, trumpets, no strings.
Yeah. That's nice. I like that. All wind. Yeah.
Yes.
And so are a lot of these players that are, you know, playing with the wind ensemble also playing with the symphony and also playing in a bunch of other places too, right?
That's correct. Many of our players do play in the symphony, but because we're a larger group than is in the symphony, we do have additional players as well.
Oh, that's great. And so do you put on a regular season, kind of like, you know, you choose specific times of year to do a show? And how does that work?
We do generally have two concerts a year, one in the fall. And so this is our fall concert coming up. And then we do one in the spring.
And are they? And so this one, this Saturday, is actually out at Thunder Mountain?
That's correct. This concert is Saturday at 7 o'clock, the Thunder Mountain High School Auditorium. No, there is no charge, so please come and enjoy. We do accept donations, though. And one of the exciting things about this concert is that the Thunder Mountain High School Band is going to be joining us for one piece. So on stage, you're going to have close to 100 musicians for one piece, which is going to be very exciting.
Oh, that's a great partnership. And if you haven't heard music at Thunder Mountain, the acoustics there are really lovely.
It's a wonderful place to play, so we're very excited to be there.
So this time around, you have a guest conductor. Can you tell us a little bit about him?
Okay. We do have a guest conductor for this concert, and his name is Dr. Dwayne Corbin. And unfortunately, he couldn't be here because he is out at Thunder Mountain in a rehearsal right at this moment. He is an associate professor of instrumental music at Simpson University in Redding, California. And he has also been a guest percussion player with the Juno Symphony a couple of years ago. If you were at the concert where he did some mallet work and things, he was a soloist. And he does come up also occasionally to fill in their percussion section. And that's how we met him, just talking one day. And we learned that he has a love for wind bands and that he was also a conductor. And we said, oh, we have to get together. So we're just delighted that he was able to come.
Oh, that's fabulous. So what kind of music are you going to be playing this Saturday? Can you give us a few hints?
Sure. We have a really wide variety, and I think that's one of the neat things about this concert. We have pieces that's going to be a small group, about a 13-piece ensemble that plays a piece by Richard Strauss, which is just going to feature your woodwinds, like your flutes, clarinets, oboes, bassoons. And we have two pieces that are going to feature just the brass sections, nice fanfares. We have a really strong brass section, so we wanted to kind of feature them predominantly. And then some pieces for the whole group, a couple of dances from West Side Story, a piece by an American composer, Vincent Persichetti, called Divertimento for Band. And they're just lots of nice tunes in these. They're very danceable and singable. You'll hear lots of nice melodies when you come.
Oh, that sounds really nice. So as far as the spring concert coming up, when can people look for that?
We don't have quite a specific date yet, but it's going to be towards the end of April, the beginning of May. And Todd Hunt, who is one of our local resident conductors here in Juno, is going to be conducting that concert. So it will be another wonderful concert.
That sounds good. And so people, you said it's a free event.
It's a free event.
So all these the whole wind ensemble is doing this just for the love of wind, really?
We do. We get together to play because we love playing and we want people then to come and hear what we enjoy doing.
And what's the rehearsal process like for one of these shows?
We practice on Saturday mornings. So we usually start about 8 weeks before our concert. And so we've been playing since about the beginning of September. And then this week, of course, Dr. Corbin has been here only 1 week, so we've had rehearsals just about every night.
That's great. And if people want more information about the Wind Ensemble, where can they check it out?
We have email. It's junocommunityband@gmail.com, and we also have a website at Juno Community Band.
So it's all part of the kind of Juno Community Band, which is...
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And you all are super active in other areas of the community as well.
Right. One of the things, actually, how this organization got started was to provide a marching band for the 4th of July parade. And so many people will recognize us from if you watch the parades. But this is a separate group because it is really a sit-down inside concert where the marching band does marches, and both are good music.
Yeah, I love how that just one thing sprouts another. That's great.
Right, right.
Well, super. So that's Saturday night, starts at 7 p.m. It's at Thunder Mountain High School, and it's the Juno Wind Ensemble, and then special guest Thunder Mountain Band.
That's correct.
That sounds great, with guest conductor Dwayne Corbin. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for coming on air to talk to us about this.
My pleasure. Thank you for having us.
The green plastic watering can for a fake Chinese rubber plant and a fake plastic girl. What you bought from a
welcome back to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. It's Thursday, November 14th. And in the studio with me, very lucky to have Aaron Suring and Pat Race from Alaska Robotics. Welcome, guys.
Hi, Shona.
Thanks.
Yeah. So you're here to talk about a Kickstarter campaign. Gotta love the Kickstarters.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. What's this one about for you guys?
We are trying to raise funds to – actually, we have raised funds. We're going to produce a series of political satire shorts during the legislative session. It'll be like a comedy news series, kind of like Weekend Update on Saturday Night Live or mm-hmm. like The Daily Show, except for it'll be more localized. It'll be all about Alaskan issues and what's going on in the legislature and around the state.
Nice. How many shorts are you expecting to – how long will this last and how many shorts?
Well, it'll be during the session, so it'll last throughout the session, but it'll be based on how much money we raise. Right now we're doing at least three, and we'll hopefully do somewhere in the six range, depending on what kind of funny level we hit.
Yeah, which would be once every other week. So we're hoping to do one show every other week or once a week, even if we can reach that level. And we're heading into the last week of of fundraising. And so that's always with Kickstarter campaigns, there's always a big push at the very beginning and a big push at the end. So we're getting to that point at the end where we're going to be running around begging people for money and asking for support, and it'll be kind of like a pledge drive week, except for we don't own a radio station.
Good thing you're here. Yeah. So for those folks who don't know what Kickstarter is, and there's probably about two people who don't, but for those two people, can you tell us how it works and where to find the information?
Yeah, Kickstarter is a crowdfunding website, so it allows people to individually support projects, and then maybe you get an item in return, or you get to see that thing exist. In our case, we have some, like, you know, you have kind of the coffee cup reward levels, but you also are supporting the show, and you're saying, hey, we want you to make more episodes of the show, and you're bringing this thing to existence. Like, at the higher end, you can get publicity, you can get, you know, your name put in lights or whatever, and you can be a part of the show. And then on the lower end, you're just doing something to support the community and something to support the show and to, you know, say thanks for some of the stuff that we've already done.
Yeah, sure. So what was the impetus behind this project? I mean, what made you say yes? I mean, political satire, it's what was behind it?
Well, we've done several before, and they're always just a lot of fun. But we wanted to be more organized about it and have a more just a direct route to make sure that this happens and that we get things done. Because we always just kind of like shoehorn things in around when we have time to do them. And this, we're taking some time out and saying, this is what we're going to do. We're actually going
to
do this.
Yeah, I'm excited to be planning it out ahead of time and to sort of have a schedule that we'll be on. And in the past, it's always just been sort of a, like, let's throw a blue screen over the weekend and make a quick fake news program and see if someone from the legislature will come down and be on it.
But, so intentional satire.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
So have you gotten, you know, I haven't seen any of these, which I'm bummed. And
you've probably seen Downtown versus the Valley.
Yes, I have.
Okay,
yes,
so that is probably totally right. Our very first, like, foray into political satire. We did a film called Downtown versus the Valley, which everyone shows their friends from outside of Juneau to tell them what Juneau is like. And it's a little dated now, but I think it's still pretty relevant. And then we've done a ton of films since then. We did a film called Buy Back Alaska, which was a proposal to buy the state legislature from VECO. And so every person would chip in $15 out of their PFD, and we would be able to bribe the state legislature to work on our behalf as citizens. And so that was a really popular one we did. We did a big send-off for Frank Murkowski. We did a tribute, which was a musical parody of Leaving on a Jet Plane, sung by Colette Costa. It was beautiful. Riley Woodford did the music for it. And,
yeah, that was great.
And we've just done a bunch of these things over the years. We did, during the Gulf oil spill, we did a whole series on the efforts in the Gulf, and we did that in the style of a news program, and that was the first time we did the news
thing.
Straight
up news, yeah.
Yeah, and so the news format's pretty fun and easy for us to do, and so we're going to try and work around the news format and then maybe do some more like man on the street type stuff.
Great. So it'll be these particular political satires will be actually news-based. There'll be like an anchor person and...
Yeah, it'll be kind of tied together that way.
Yeah. I mean, there'll still be like little shorts and bits here and there that are completely separate, but yeah.
Great. Man on the Street Daily Show.
Yeah, maybe throw in a big commercial for an oil company or something. Yeah.
Oh, nice. So how does the have you had representatives get involved in this, and what's the response from people? Have you heard from folks?
Yeah.
We had Bill Wilkowski came on last time, and we're going to try and get more of that stuff happening this time, but they love us up there, and they can't always say that, but yeah.
Yeah, and actually that's an interesting thing with Kickstarter. When you support a project, you kind of go on the backers list, and so we've had to kind of, as we've put this project out there, we've realized there are a lot of people that support what we're doing that are very politicized jobs and can't really openly support us. So we've had people drop off like brown paper bags with money in it and write checks at the office.
Yeah.
And it's so like shady and
like
great.
They can't, we're trying to go with the whole like legislative theme. So,
So I'll drop off a paper bag at the triangle then.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Nice. So what is the goal financially? What is the Kickstarter goal and where are you at?
Yeah, well, so we've raised about $5,000 so far. Our base funding level was $3,000, and that was to do one episode every week. And One episode every month during the and our middle goal is 8,000, which is the next one we're pushing towards, and that'll do one episode every other week. And then for one episode a week, we'd want to raise about $20,000. And the reason it kind of ramps up, it doesn't do like the typical thing where you get, like, as you get more episodes, they get cheaper. Ours actually get more expensive because they're taking up more of our like work time, and so we have to be able to offset the costs and pay rent and things like that.
Of course. Yeah. And that's, I didn't know that Kickstarter had those multiple levels now. That's pretty great.
Well, it's just something that they haven't actually really implemented. It's something that creators have sort of started doing. There are a lot of things in the Kickstarter framework that people are just kind of starting to implement themselves. So, like, the idea of stretch goals is one, where you say, like, okay, our base goal is this, and then if we reach this level, we'll add this other sweetener to the deal. You know, like, we'll do more episodes, we'll bring in a guest, things like that. And so, and we haven't really like announced a lot of other people that we're working with, but we've talked to a ton of people in the community that are like really funny, fantastic, creative people, and we're going to try and get more people involved in what we're doing as like correspondents and characters and things like that.
That's fun. Yeah. So when they're done, when they're finished, and where do we find them? Where can people see them?
I think we're going to distribute pretty much through our website and through YouTube, and then we'll also have digital downloads for those people who have sponsored the project. They'll just be able to like directly download them from a bucket we'll set up somewhere, and then and that should be able to like get around any kind of funky, you know, state or school
blocks or firewalls or whatever.
Right. Yeah. So people will be able to get it a number of different formats, and then I'm hoping that a lot of I'm hoping that as things we do are relevant in the day-to-day news, that news sites will actually embed them as like
bonus content.
Extra content for their stories and things like that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So if people want to donate, because I'm sure, I mean, it's funny, you know, and who doesn't love some political satire? Where can people go?
Well, there's links from our website, alaskarobotics.com. Or you can go just Google Kickstarter Alaska Robotics, and we'll be one of the top things right there. So
great.
Pretty straightforward there.
Great. And then I do want to ask, too, just for people who don't know, because you guys do a lot of stuff in this community, for people who don't know what Alaska Robotics is, can you actually fill folks in? That'd be great.
Yeah, okay. we're kind of like a – I guess we're sort of like a collective. We do a lot of different things. It's mostly just right now it's like me and Lou and Aaron, and we've got a bunch of like tangential friends that we rope in for different projects. we run the gallery downtown, which is the Alaska Robotics Gallery, where we exhibit a lot of like my artwork and a bunch of other local artists, Christy Erickson and Sarah Asper-Smith. And we carry short films there by local artists, and a bunch of like comic books, graphic novels, things like that. And then we make short films and webcomics, and publish a lot of our things that we create online at alaskarobotics.com. So we sort of do a lot of everything. And we created Alaska Robotics kind of like a label. We wanted to differentiate between the work we were doing for hire and the work we were doing for ourselves. So it's Alaska Robotics is all the fun stuff that we just kind of do whether we're being paid to or not, just because we kind of have to.
Yeah. So can you tell people where the gallery is again? Because, if you haven't been down there, you've got to go check it out. It's just a really cool little spot. There's a lot of different things going on, too. I mean, just to even look at.
Yeah. And actually, we've been having a lot of workshops. We do a comic drawing workshop on the weekends. We've been doing life drawing sessions on Wednesdays. The gallery's downtown at 220 Front Street, which is right in between the Viking and the 20th Century Theater. So right on Front Street there. And we'll be doing a big First Friday thing. I'm going to have some new stuff up, and Christy's going to have some new prints, and it'll be a lot of fun.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. And can you give us your website one more time so people can check it out and make sure they donate to that Kickstarter campaign?
Yeah, it's alaskarobotics.com.
Sweet. Easy enough. Go there. Go there now. Thanks so much, Aaron and Pat. It's always a pleasure to talk with you all. And we'll be right back with our next guest. And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. It's Thursday, November 14th. And in the studio with me, I have Colleen Jones, Dan Weiss, and Kelly Pajanug. And they're here with Hospice and Home Care of Juno. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. So you're here to talk about the Remembrance Gathering and Special Candlelight Ceremony actually happening this weekend. That's this Sunday. And could you tell me a little bit more about it?
Yes, it's a gathering. We're meeting at the Bridge Adult Day Center, and we'll be meeting people that have lost loved ones are invited to come, and it's a remembrance service. We'll have some special music and a time where we do some readings and different things, but we'll also read through the list of people that have passed away and light a candle for them and remember their life and their contribution to our life. And so it'll be a time of remembrance and a real special time just to gather together and support one another.
Kelly, is this something that you all do every year?
Yes, this is an annual event. It'll actually be my first event as I just came on board the end of June with Hospice and Home Care. So I'm definitely excited, going to be involved with a few of our other employees and staff members, and our volunteers as well have a big part in the event. So looking forward to it.
Great. And Colleen, how did this event come about?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know the history. I've only been with the hospice a year and a half, and I think it's been around for quite a few years. But I believe it got developed. They just wanted to have some special remembrance at the beginning of kind of the holiday season, which can often be a difficult time for families that have lost a loved one over the last year. And so they just really wanted to open it up to the community, not even just solely hospice patients, but families, but others in the community that want to come together and remember those family members and just, kind of honor them and celebrate and have a nice afternoon together.
And is this kind of event something that is non-denominational, or how does that work?
It's not geared to any specific denomination. It's for anybody, whether they go to church or not. But it's really geared for support and a remembrance and to share comfort with one another, not only for those who have lost loved ones, but also for the hospice staff who really care about the patients that they have gotten to know. And so it's an opportunity to interact with the family members as well and show that support and that we're there for them.
Yeah. And you said it's open for the whole community?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. And for those folks who don't know exactly about hospice and home care here in Juneau, what is it that you all provide to the community? Because it's such a great service.
Yes, I could touch bases on that. And the hospice piece is a very comprehensive team that involves chaplain, social work services, bereavement and grief services, nursing services as well. We provide home health services. So it's directed towards end-of-life care and drawing from pain management and symptom control, and that there's more of a comforting experience for that piece as much as possible. The home health aspect of things is a little different in regards to we are trying to treat a specific condition to meet goals to have individuals in our community back at work or back doing their activities, the daily things in the community. So those are just two different aspects, but both things that we gear towards.
Great. And Colleen, what time is the event on Sunday?
The event actually is Sunday at 3:00, and it usually lasts, I believe, I haven't been there, so an hour and a half to maybe 2 hours at the max. Is that right, Dan?
Yeah, I think it's even shorter than that.
Okay,
it's a short service, and we have some refreshments afterwards.
And we have some music. Yes. Tom Loker is going to be doing some music for us, and so we just hope to have a nice time to share. But, yeah, Sunday at 3 at the Bridge Adult Daycare, and that's at 1803 Glacier Highway. So if someone's not sure where that's at, it's kind of on Egan off to the side there.
Great. So it seems like one of the kind of things that you can actually maybe drop in to pay your remembrances, and so that it's not so structured, or will the day be pretty structured?
There is a structured service, gotcha. But then there's okay. also just a kind of a gathering time afterwards with a lot of great refreshments and time to visit with one another and reconnect with people maybe you haven't seen for a while. So.
Yeah. And will you be leading that service?
Yes, we're actually all participating. I will be giving a talk during that service for a few minutes. So, but there will be a lot of different participation of readings and lighting candles and those different kind of things. So,
that's great. And that's Hospice and Home Care of Juneau. It's a remembrance gathering and special candlelight ceremony this Sunday at 3 p.m. at the Bridge Adult Day Center. Colleen, Dan, and Kelly, thank you so much for coming on air to talk about that. It's just a wonderful thing that you provide for the community.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're glad to be here.
To my love, took it down. I climbed a mountain and I turned around. And I saw my reflection in snow-covered hills till the landslide brought me down. Oh, mirror in the sky, what is love? Can't shine in my heart right above. Can I sail through the changing ocean tide? Can I handle the season of my
Hi, this is Ethan Side.
And this is Catherine Noreen.
Here from the Juneau Douglas High School hockey team. And
we're here to pump you up.
And invite you to this weekend's home games, Friday at 8.
And Saturday at 7.
At the Treadwell Ice Arena.
Tickets are available at the door.
Come support your local high school hockey team.
We will rock you.
That's Crimson Bear Hockey.
This weekend at Treadwell Arena.
See you there.
Join us November 23rd for the KTOO Taku Fisheries Forks, Corks, and Kegs. 6 caterers will prepare a total of 12 unique halibut and salmon dishes for an all-you-can-eat feast. Come at 4 to do an Alaskan Brewing Company tutored beer tasting. The feast starts at 5. Caterers include Abby's Kitchen, Silver Bow Bakery, Suwana Cafe, Devil's Hideaway, Rockwell, and Shea Alaska Cooking School. Specialty imports will pair wines with food. Tickets at ktoo.org, the station, and the door. Forks, Corks, and Kegs, November 23rd at the Jack.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon, the one, the only, Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up.
Well,
Arts,
okay.
Arts Up. What? Arts Up, Nancy.
What's going on? Golly, well, there are some things going on. It is Bald Eagle Festival still.
Up in Haines.
Might not be raining there.
Not doubtful. That's highly doubtful.
Let's see. This evening at 6:30, there is a thing over at the Northern Light United Church for its Prisoner Reentry Forum and Peer Panel. So people who have been incarcerated and are coming back into the... whatever the rest of us are doing out here, I don't know. But anyway, it's an opportunity if you're interested in how to help folks who are trying to find jobs and stuff like that. I think this is a thing to do. It's free. Let's see. The Audubon Society is doing Anon and the Celebration of Bears.
Oh, a what?
I don't know.
I'm like, non. I thought
and
that was
and the celebration
bread.
Of bears.
Oh, I don't know.
Thunder Mountain High School Library. It's free. There's salsa dancing out at UAS at 7 o'clock. Theater in the Rough. We got Ladies of the Camellias.
I'm going this weekend. Well, next weekend. I'm excited about that show.
It's getting lots of laugh reviews.
Yeah, so, and they're selling out, so you got to get those tickets online.
Get your tickets. And same with Perseverance Theater. Tonight's a pay-as-you-can, I believe.
That's right. And Sunday's pay-as-you-can. We were we had to push anybody, but we had to turn. We had to, I know, right? I'm all pirate all the time. Yes. We had to turn people away, so I hope that
yeah,
people...
do get your tickets. I've been able to see that one, and it was lots of fun.
That's fun, yeah.
Yeah, lots of swashbuckling, sword play.
Yes.
And who doesn't like that? 8 p.m., screening Dopamine Absinthe Films. That's at Centennial Hall tonight at 8.
It's called Dopamine?
Mm-hmm.
That's funny.
Okay. There's... There's an arts and crafts collectibles fair out at Nugget Mall this weekend. The concert, the organ concert is T.J. Duffy on Friday at noon. It's always a nice place to go have lunch. Fridays at noon.
Sounds great, too,
yeah.
In there.
6 p.m. on Friday is the Canvas movie night. They're doing Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yes.
One of my favorites.
I love that movie.
Yeah. So let's see. Basic Skating Skills for Youth Adults starts Friday at 6:30 out at the Treadwell Ice Arena. So if you want to get going for the winter, get going with that. Evening at Egan, Deconstructing Racism, Power and Privilege in Our Community. That's at the Egan Lecture Hall. That's at free at 7. We have John Unziker at the Gold Room, Baranoff. We've got Perseverance Theater's Young Company doing The Boxcar Children.
That's right. Opens tomorrow night.
Are you part of that?
Directing it.
Alrighty then. How is it?
It's coming along nicely.
Mm-hmm. The Boxcar Kids, as I recall those, I remember reading the books. They were fun.
They're super fun, yeah.
Yeah. So we've got three things you could see tomorrow night at 7:30. Boxcar Children, Treasure Island, and Ladies of Camellia.
Yeah. Theater. All theater all the time.
All theater all the time. Slushnut Snow is doing a release show featuring the Wool Pullers and the Tammies. At the UAS Rec Center. This is free for UAS students. Guests are 5. That's at 8 p.m. Saturday, let's see. It's holiday Mission Bazaar time everywhere.
It
all
is,
the time.
Isn't it? Yes.
Northern Light United Church, 9 a.m. to 2:30. They always have wonderful things. And usually there's soup. I remember that. They often have soup. So go there, do your Christmas shopping, and have some soup. League of Women Voters is having a meeting with Assemblymember Karen Crane at 9:30 in the morning at the K2 Conference Center. You guys just remodeled.
Yeah,
it's
super
cool.
Cool down there.
Super cool.
Yeah, I love
go
it.
Go just to see the Conference Center. let's see, we've got Juno Pioneers Home, 25th anniversary open house is on Saturday at 2 p.m. That's everybody knows where the Pioneer Home is, I assume. So go out and enjoy that. It's a wonderful facility here in our town. Gold Town's got a whole bunch of ski movies and all kinds of really interesting documentaries showing. go to their website to get their schedule. The Juneau Wind Ensemble and Thunder Mountain Band in concert at 7 p.m. on Saturday night at Thunder Mountain High School. That's a donations type thing. Seasons Beatings. Roller Derby.
That's right. I forgot it was Seasons Beatings.
It's the league mashup at Centennial Hall, 7 p.m. Saturday night. Get your tickets now. They usually sell out, so don't miss that. Let's see. We've got at 8 p.m. on Saturday night, Comedy That's Real, featuring Keith Barony at the Baranoff Hotel. And at 10 p.m., Kari Griffin and the Wrist Rockets are live at McGivney's. That's the former GW Teals. If you don't know where that is, go on out and see that. And then there's Disco Punch live at the Alaskan at 11 p.m. Wow. Let's see. The Ukulele Jam, as always. I don't know. Are they still doing this? I thought Rockwell's was closed.
It is.
Then how are they jamming?
I think they're jamming elsewhere.
Okay, well, they're jamming elsewhere. See if you can hear the ukuleles and go in that direction.
Follow the people with the ukuleles walking downtown.
Yeah, let's see. I want to talk about things that are happening on Monday. We are bringing this really unusual international performance artist, actually. She goes all over the world. She just has returned from, I think, Burma or, I don't know, some faraway place. Anyway, she is offering two workshops, and then on Wednesday is her performance. And I would say this is a don't-miss-it situation.
This is this Monday?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, cool.
It's archetypal images, and then the workshop on Tuesday is using light in sculpture and things that you wear. If you're a wearable art fan, this is for you, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, and
she
looks
she's gonna perform. Yeah. Most unusual.
Cool.
So, and let's see. I think that's all we know.
Fabulous. So where can people get this information online if they want to?
They can go to the jahc.org website or to the k2.org website. Both places use the same calendar. And if you want to get your stuff on it, send us an email. And we'll make sure to get it on it.
Yeah, and it's so great that you all compile this list every week. It's wonderful. And, Nancy, what's the name of that artist again that we can look for?
Shasha Higbee. And, it's H-I-G-B-Y and Shaw, S-H-A-S-H-A. She's got YouTubes out there. It's very unusual. One of the things she wants us to provide is cat toys because during the performance she needs call and response sort of with little bells. So.
Oh.
Bring tiny little bells.
Oh, I love cat toys. That sounds like a good time.
I don't know if we can bring the cats, too.
No cats,
no
just
cats,
their
just
bells.
The toys.
Nice. Right. Thank you so much, Ms. Nancy DeCherney, every week here with Nancy with Arts Up. And this is KTOO Juneau. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Thanks for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon this Thursday, November 14th. I hope you have a lovely rest of your day and stay tuned for a fabulous Juneau Afternoon tomorrow at 3 p.m.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. At a White House